the program today, Mr. Daniel Cromer, here to talk about his book, Starlight Symphony, and the fundraiser he's doing for that. Morena, how you doing?
Pleasure to be here. Really, 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 really excited to talk about this.
Mm-hmm. It's good. It's good. How's your commute here? How did you find this place? Okay.
Yeah, I've gotten, I think, the first couple of weeks or so, because I'm a first year, so it's funny to get your bearings, but I'm already familiar with the space around Waitara 1, so I just took a little walk over here. I think it's good to stretch your legs.
Totally. I totally agree. I had a nice walk this morning, jaunt through the botanical gardens to get to work.
Oh, yeah.
It's very beautiful.
Love the botanical gardens.
Big shout outs. Mm. Big shout outs. You've told me that Starlight Symphony, the new book, is inspired by books like Discworld, The Lord of the Rings, and games like The Elder Scrolls. Mm. I assume that Skyrim is your favorite out of those Elder Scrolls.
Yes, I can hear the music that you're playing now from the soundtrack. Absolutely. Yes. Skyrim was like the game that like got me through high school.
Mm.
I mean, it's because I was at Bayfield, so that was where my roots as a theatre kid sort of started.
Yeah.
But absolutely loved Skyrim when I first started playing it. Mm. It was just really just an exciting thing to just sort of get, just forget about the world for a while and just yourself completely lost in a different world. And you know, time doesn't matter, and you're just off having an adventure.
Yeah.
And at one point, I even started playing the previous games, like Oblivion
and Morrowind.
I haven't. I actually need to play that. This is why I'm like hankering to try and get a new gaming PC, because I need to start playing Morrowind as well. But I played Oblivion for a little bit, and it's like exact same feeling. And I don't have a bias towards like graphics or how good a game looks, because that generation. But because I just love it all. I just can't get enough of it.
Oh, mate, art direction and storytelling over graphics any day. Yeah. But whenever you replay Skyrim, do you do the same build over and over and over? Or do you try and branch out? Because I've had that problem where I just become a stealth archer and the game is so easy.
Yeah, I do. I think that's sort of the running joke. It's sort of like carcinization, where everything evolves to be a crab.
Yeah.
It's like everyone eventually evolves to a stealth archer.
Yeah.
I've only ever done like two major. I'm very like attached to the playthroughs that I make. I've only ever had like two, and I sort of go in the same direction. It's sort of like a jack of all trades, but I tend to go for I pick an Argonian.
Lusty Argonian mate.
Yeah.
Real book in Skyrim, by the way. Real book in Skyrim.
Yes, an actual. That's such an inside joke. Yeah, no, plenty of time. Mm. But no, that's, yeah, I think games like that definitely have sparked that interest in me to carry on fantasy, and definitely movies as well, especially like ones I watched growing up as a kid.
I thought it was Dark Crystal.
Dark Crystal, yeah. Yes.
TV show, I wasn't a huge fan of. Movie, insane.
Yeah, I love the movie. I was actually, I did love the series as well, but I'm so, what's the criteria on cussing?
Shit, I think is the limit.
Shit is the absolute limit.
Shit would be the limit, yeah.
I absolutely loved the series, but I was so infuriated when it got cancelled after one season.
Yeah.
I actually have their book that like is like the bestiary of all of like the creatures and the lore about the world.
Yep.
It's such an amazing read, and it's very like beautiful paintings and everything.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, absolutely love the Dark Crystal.
Yeah.
And the never-ending story as well.
Oh, the one with the big dragon dog?
Yeah,
thing? Falcor. Yeah.
I love that
one. The big turtle?
Yes.
Yeah.
Big turtle. We don't even care whether or not we care.
I watched that and I was sober and I felt like I was high as hell. It didn't really make any sense to me, but I want to rewatch it.
Yeah.
I probably need to give it more time. This new book, Starlight Symphony, will this be the first novel you've ever created?
Yes, it will be.
Okay, why would you start with a saga?
I know. I think
you're setting yourself up a very big project.
That was I think that was sort of the major thing. I was sort of biting off more than I could chew.
Uh-huh.
The first book itself is called The Kindling, whereas the whole overarching series itself is called The Starlight Symphony.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think if anything, if I would say to any like new aspiring writers or authors out there, definitely start off with something small.
Mm.
For me, at least, this big project of mine just meant a whole lot to me, so I couldn't help but dive in.
Yeah.
But definitely start small, like doing things like short stories or flash fiction, I think definitely helps like a ton, because mm-hmm. you're sort of like flex your muscles a little bit just doing like smaller stuff, and each time you finish a little project you get that crack of dopamine that you really need. Whereas with something like a novel, it's definitely more of a marathon more than anything else.
Yes.
And sometimes it can feel like you're stagnating. I mean, even right now, because I'd started, you know, the first book when I was an absolutely terrible writer and I was just picking up the tricks of the trade. Mm. And I started writing it when I was, like, very, very... It was, like, back in, like, 2019.
Oh, wow.
And, you know, and it took... Exactly. And I've only just now started getting ready to write the second one, so it's, like... You know, taking your time, but, you know, there's always that little bit of anxiety that, you know, you've got to get a move on.
Now, the idea for the saga came about when you were in the US on a college program at Disney World, which is insane. How was that experience? How was Disney World? Was it quite alien?
It was definitely, that's definitely one of the highlights of my life.
Really?
I was there for about a whole year.
Yeah.
The original plan was for 6 months, but you had the option to extend.
Yeah.
I worked at one of the resorts where, you know, where guests would go and stay. But on my days off, I would go and check out all of the parks as well, because this was Walt Disney World in Orlando, Florida.
Uh-huh.
So that's divided into like four individual parks.
Yeah.
And I got to check out all of those inside and out. And that's just... There was nothing about the place that directly inspired the book per se, but it was definitely a place to be inspired or to get inspired.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I met all sorts of wonderful people over in the States, and it was probably the first time I'd ever, like, been out on my own, truly. So it was definitely, like, a nerve-wracking experience, but also really rewarding for the soul as well. So it was just... Absolutely terrific year, that one.
Have you heard David Lynch's take on, like, ideas and inspiration?
No.
He says that, like, ideas don't really come from you. You pick them up. So I think I like what you said about Disney World not being a place that directly inspired it, but a place for inspiration.
Yeah.
A place where maybe you were more amplified, more attuned to pick up an idea that was floating in the breeze, you know?
Yeah.
And then become the voice of that idea.
That reminds me of what Picasso said. Like, good artists create, great artists steal. I feel I sense that same premise exactly. No, absolutely.
The setting of the book is a kind of, is it sci-fi fantasy? Because it kind of is. It's like you know, people fighting with swords and stuff. There's magic, but there's also airships.
Yeah, it's definitely leaning more in the fantasy direction.
Yes, for sure.
I think if you've seen Disney's Treasure Planet.
When I was a kid, I don't remember it, but it was like a
sort of that kind of aesthetic is probably like closer to the bar more than anything. There's a bit of like really like sophisticated technology, but magic is really really ubiquitous in this world, so it's sort of like integrated into everything. So it's sort of a nice little blend, but it leans harder into fantasy more so.
Is solar punk a good description of the kind of aesthetic and the vibe?
Solar punk would probably be a bit more towards sci-fi, but I think what would match it here is that solar punk definitely matches this aesthetic of a world that sort of realizes like clean energy.
Yeah.
Because magic in my universe is a very clean energy source, like the cleanest out there. So it's sort of realizing that kind of world or society that is pretty advanced in terms of expanding and flourishing in a really nice way without negatively affecting the environment too much. But you know, conflicts still arise from that, of course.
Of course. Are there any dwarves in your universe?
It's certainly, there aren't any of the traditional D&D races per se. That was something I sort of wanted to step away from.
Avoid.
So there's nothing wrong with that at all.
No.
It's just something that I wanted to give my own little twist on it. So there's no dwarves or elves. There may be dragons. No comment there. It's a lot of other... Humans are sort of that predominant, like, sapient species, but there are, like, other, let's say beast folk.
Beast folk.
Mystical beast folk out
Hell
there
yeah.
that are sort of, they haven't really been brought up into the storyline yet, but now they'll play a bigger role.
I always find it interesting with beast folk in games, because, like, I don't know, it seems like a lot of, like, how do they navigate, you know, eating meat?
Yeah.
You know, like...
What kind of teeth do they have?
Yeah. Well, like, but I don't know. If you're an Argonian, say from Skyrim, Argonian, for folks who don't know, is, you know, a big lizard people, you know.
Yeah.
Would they eat other lizards, is my question. Because, I mean, a lot of humans don't eat monkeys. Some do.
My other question is, like, the females obviously have, like, breasts, but lizards don't lactate.
True.
That's something weird. That always bugged me as well. It doesn't make sense.
The reason I would bring up dwarves is because you said there was a lot of high technology, or a decent amount of high technology. Mm. And typically in a lot of fantasy things, it's like dwarves are like the really technologically based kind of super industrious ones. Very industrial. A lot of metal around the place, which is awesome. Out of all the characters that have come up in your book, in your saga so far, which one do you see yourself the most in?
That's actually a really easy question. Definitely the main character, Marcus, because in many ways he is sort of a self-insert, but I tried to approach that as delicately as I could, because a self-insert can go so wrong where it looks like the author is like really like
circle jerk themselves.
If anything, Marcus is sort of more of a...
Marcus has cute hair, cute eyes. He has really big.
Yeah, just really like sort of like dressing myself up. But he's definitely sort of more of an idealistic view of what I and what everyone should like aspire to be. Mm. And it's obviously a bit easier to relate to a main character that is a lot closer to you and who you can relate to.
Uh-huh.
So him and I are sort of. We are very, very similar, but if anything, we're like two sides of the same coin.
Yeah.
So I try to keep that, like, engage with him to where I can tell a better story, but, you know, keep him separate from myself as well. Mm-hmm. So definitely.
I want to touch on the nature of the context of the first book, because it's roughly about this main character, Marcus, who's a late-blooming, kind of fledgling sorcerer, discovering themselves alongside a dark, handsome rogue merc, mercenary, and his sister, while they try to maybe save a region from annihilation. What will the next one be about, and how many books are you planning so far?
Yes, the second book, which I currently have locked and loaded, and it's in the chamber right now, is where I introduce that our fourth main character, Maria, who is a princess of this very wonderful kingdom to the south of the continent. Mm. And her whole royal life is sort of flipped upside down as she sort of goes on this... She sort of meets up with the previous characters from the first book, and they all sort of become our gang. And they sort of go on a journey to try and rediscover this very ancient city that we could probably compare to Atlantis.
Oh, yeah.
And that's sort of the beginning of her story as well. In terms of how many books I have planned, I would say at least 8.
Wow.
At the very least.
Wow.
And again, I think this is something that I... You know, I can't... I'm not Atlas. I can't carry the world.
Yeah.
I think that's something I've struggled with, where I can't carry this burden on me too much. Mm. I just got to take it one day at a time, you know. Just let it be, like Paul McCartney.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know, if
manage the load.
Exactly. Yeah. Manage. You know, how do you eat an elephant? Just one bite at a time.
Mm. Mm.
And I think, fortunately, at this point, now that I'm actually a competent writer instead of like an awful one like I was when I first started writing it, I'm sure when I've got like more free time, because I want to focus on my studies right now. When I've got that free time, I'm sure I'll be able to pump them out way quicker.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, just take it one day at a time. Nice. Something I would tell my younger self.
What do you need? Because you got a little, not a little less condescending, a fundraiser what platform was it?
Boosted.
Boosted!
The website.
There you go, I'm Boosted. What do you need the fundraiser for? Is it just like to publish it yourself?
Yes, because I'm going the self-publishing route.
Oh, nice.
I learned about the website Boosted through the Young Writers Festival. And for those who don't know, it's basically like a Kickstarter, but specifically for the arts in New Zealand.
Yeah.
So I'm currently working with the self-publishing house called Copy Press down in Nelson, who discussed like a lot of like self-publishing stuff with me like a year or two ago. And basically what the campaign or the fundraiser is going to help cover is the self-publishing costs that the Copy Press will go through. They've made the decision that they'll probably split this first book into 2 volumes, just because to help with expenses and how big the book is.
Mm-hmm.
And it'll also help pay my professional editor as well.
Nice.
So those are the 2 major things that the campaign is going to help cover. It's going to be live in about... I'll settle on when the campaign is going to begin, but it'll be like within the next month, hopefully.
Cool.
If things go really well.
Cool. Okay. Well, people keep your ears peeled on Boosted for the Starlight Symphony fundraiser. It's really, really awesome stuff. I want to thank you for your time coming on.
Pleasure.
You've requested Vinswept.
Yes.
With their track Frozen in Time.
Right.
How did you come across this track?
It was definitely like when I started, like, listening to a bunch of like playlists while I was writing.
Uh-huh.
I stumbled upon that artist in particular and a lot of his other stuff, and I a lot of his work is something that I would include in those playlists, so I'm very familiar with his stuff now. So it was one of those things that you just stumble upon by accident.
Awesome. And it's very fantasy, gets you in the mood.
Yeah.
So to speak.
So in the mood.
Yeah.
His stuff is really whimsical.
It's a fantasy aphrodisiac, folks. It's Vinswept with Frozen in Time. Thank you for coming on, Daniel Cromer. Any final words?
If you want to check out some of the drawings I've been doing, you can see me on Instagram at DB Cromer, and I'll talk about a bunch of my other socials as well.
Awesome.
That was a Radio 191 event podcast! You can find more of them at r1.co.nz/podcast.